Welcome to Hype episode 97. My name is Selena. I'm here with Kyle and Pam, and just a little bit terrified because I'm realizing how close we are to 100, and I think that's amazing and scary. And we still don't know what we're doing for our big 100th.
I wonder if are we going to do a 100th thing?
Oh, we're just going to skip 100 and go straight to 101.
Yeah, we should.
What are you asking?
I guess if we were going to celebrate the 100th episode somehow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I joked last week that we're just going to do a 100th special, but I guess not. So, I don't know what we're planning to do. Actually, we don't have any plans yet, but I was suggesting, other than the 100th special, that we just do like we did at Christmas, casual look back at like our lives and what we're up to and
stuff
that the listeners don't care about because we're at 100, so we can indulge in talking about ourselves. I don't know. We'll figure it out, but it's sort of coming up nicely with, I was saying how what we're going to be doing in the summer and stuff, but Merima isn't doing any of that, so that's kind of sad to be talking too much about that, but we'll figure out what we're doing. I know.
Well, you know what, in all seriousness, like, if you're listening and you have like burning questions that you've always wanted to ask us, you should send them in, and then if we have enough, maybe we'll just do that for the 100th episode.
Yeah, guys, that'd be fun.
You guys can interview us and we'll be like really nervous about it because we're always asking the questions and not answering them.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll see if the listeners want to take us up on that one of a kind, you know, one time offer. You can finally find out what really goes on behind the scenes at Hypeable. You know, it's good stuff.
scary stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Hypeable just turned 5 this week.
Yes.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
Isn't that amazing?
Crazy. And you're like
a little dance party.
You're you're like the oldest staffer here.
Yeah, you are.
I am the old
I think I've been working with Andrew the longest, but you've been at Hypeable since the beginning.
Yeah. You've been with Andrew since the Twilight Source days.
Yeah, so, since 2008, 2009.
Oh my gosh.
That's crazy.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Wow. You're going on your 10-year
anniversary. Oh my god, don't even. Gonna have to text him after and be like, do you know that we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary soon?
Oh my god.
Wow, that's crazy. That's so crazy. But yeah, Hypeable is 5, and that's also slightly freak outable, that should just be the title of Hypeable from now on out. But yeah, so we've been doing it this long time and we like to think we've gotten a little bit better at it, but still have a lot to learn. Yes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is Hype, where we talk about this week's fandom news. We don't actually just talk about ourselves and our website, but if you do want to talk about this week's news stories or the podcast or what you'd like us to talk about next week, or send us your very personal questions that Pam just promised that we would answer, thanks Pam, you can do that either by tweeting us at HypeableHype, or emailing us hype@hypeable.com, or going to the website, which is hypeable.com, and that's hypeable.com, and find the posts for this podcast, and then you can just let us know what you would like us to talk about, and we'll read your feedback later on in the show. So let's start off today, like we always start off a podcast, Hype Podcast, with our How We Hype. Now, Pam, I'm so glad. I can always count on you to keep us updated with the music news. So tell us the biggest story of the world.
Well, Lemonade is not just a drink you enjoy in summertime anymore, ladies and gentlemen. It's actually Beyoncé's new visual album. And I will admit, I'm going to dodge all the proverbial tomatoes that are coming my way. I had very low expectations for this because I wasn't really sure what to expect. I think that she did something really great with her self-titled album that was released about, I think, 3 years ago now or 2 years ago. But, you know, when you spring something on an entire fan base and on the entire world, it's like, can you have the same magic twice? And Beyoncé actually managed to pull this one off probably even better than her last release. I definitely think that it is a visual album in every sense of the word. So you can listen to just the audio, but it definitely is meant to go with the visual component. And I was really, really impressed. It's probably the most cohesive album that she's ever made. It follows an entire storyline, as most of you have probably already read, with the Becky with the good hair stuff and all that good stuff. It's part spoken word and part music. And what really, really impressed me the most was the way that she was able to play with a couple of different genres throughout the hour and I think 50 minutes that the entire album runs for. And even though she did play with different sounds, like there's some rock influences in there. And there is even like sometimes there's like a couple of like reggae influences in there. And then of course she did some like R&B, which is what she's known for. It still felt like an entire body of work. And I think that that is what makes a really good album. So overall, I was very, very impressed. And if you haven't checked it out yet because you are not sure if you should believe the hype or not, I definitely think that it's worth it for you to just go see what it's all about, because she might actually surprise you with this one. If you're like not necessarily a Beyoncé believer yet, you might be after you listen to this.
You know, I listened to a couple of songs because I was busy, but then I found out that it was on HBO for like the day on Saturday when Game of Thrones was premiering. I was like, oh, I'll check this out before Game of Thrones. And it was really cool. And it like really confused me because she had released it on Tidal. And then the day after she released it on iTunes, and like you understand this more, Pam, I feel like you would understand Tidal more, but like, isn't the point of Tidal to like benefit like the artists, and like it's like an uprising against iTunes? So like my whole thing was like, why, what is the point of putting it on Tidal if you're going to put it on iTunes 24 hours
so
later?
It's mostly against, it's kind of like a plight against streaming and the money that artists do not make when they allow their music to be streamed. So Beyoncé's Lemonade will be available to stream exclusively on Tidal. However, you will be able to purchase it on iTunes, and okay, but it will never be available on Spotify.
It won't be available.
No. Or on like iTunes, Apple Music, or anything like that. Yeah. So anything that involves like streaming, even if you pay for the streaming service, like you won't find Beyoncé's Lemonade on there. It's for now exclusively streamable on Tidal only. Or you can shell out like the $17 to buy it on iTunes.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Wow. Thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
Because I don't have a How We Hype this week, Pam, I'll let you do a double one, because I know that you followed Marima, and I am just jumping on the bandwagon as recommendation of Jungle Book, and you went to go see it in 3D.
Gosh, it was so good. I was so
wasn't
yes.
it so good.
It was amazing. It's so funny because I really was so ho-hum about the idea of a live-action Jungle Book. I didn't really understand why it needed to be made. They had that live-action Jungle Book that came out in, like, the 90s with, like, the really old Mowgli. And that was, like, what this was, like, I don't remember having fond memories of that. So it was, like, wow, how is this going to be better? But it was so good. And the young actor that they, like, had to play Mowgli was amazing, especially when you take into consideration that pretty much this kid was, like, acting by himself the whole time, since all of the bigger actors were only lending their voices to this. The CGI mm-hmm. in this was amazing, and it just like it worked so well, and you guys were so right, and the 3D was totally worth the extra couple of dollars. And I think a lot of people take you guys up on this recommendation, because I saw a couple of our listeners actually tweeting as well that they had gone to see it in 3D as well, so that's exciting.
Yes. What was it? I was just looking for the tweet now. It was Emmy Foss said, thanks to Hype for convincing me to see the Jungle Book in 3D. It was so beautiful and I loved it. So This is so cool. And you're so right, because I went to see it again because I was like, I loved it. And I was like, I need this in my life. And the music was so good and stuff. And I went to see it in 2D and it was still good. But the 3D really added something special, which is something that I never thought I would say.
Right. Huh.
You
know,
because I hate 3D. But like in this case, it was just, it added that extra layer that it didn't in 2D. Mm-hmm.
What? And it wasn't hokey. Like, it didn't feel like it was forced. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of 3D, they want to make you, like, jump or whatever. Like, they almost force it mm-hmm. too much. But this wasn't. It was just more, there was more depth to the movie, and it worked really well. I think that they've really honed that aspect of 3D a lot over the past couple of years. And there were a couple points, obviously, where things kind of, like, were moving towards you. But it wasn't really like a sensationalized usage of 3D, which is why I think it worked really well, because there were some parts where, like in the trailers, you see like King Louis reaching his hand out. I was like, I could have sworn that was just going to go straight into the audience, and like they ended up not doing it that way and stuff. So there's like, yeah, I think it's definitely worth it. And it's like, I think they did a good job of giving us the story that we love, but also putting some twists on the characters that we love, which I really enjoyed as well.
Yeah.
Without giving too much away. I think you kind of know where I'm getting at.
Yeah, the perfect mix of old and new, I think. It was just really good. Kyle, you need to go see it if you haven't yet.
I will. I'll try.
You have to join the Jungle Book Club and see it in 3D and tell us what you think.
I will.
Because, yeah, we've all sworn off 3D, like we hate it, but in this case it just worked so well.
And that's how I've been pitching it to everyone, too. Guys, like, our host, Narima, who I know you have not met, she hates everything, but she loved this. Yeah.
Exactly. But Kylie, I guess you haven't been outside much because you've been playing a video game.
Yeah.
And I know how intense that can be.
Yeah, with your brother in Fallout. Jesus.
And myself in Fallout.
I recently got Destiny for the PlayStation 4 and it has sucked up my life.
What's it like?
It's okay. So it's like a first person like shooter type game, and it takes place in space and like in the future, and I have no idea what the storyline is, and that is the thing that I learned about Destiny after the fact, because when it first came out everyone was like, this game's awesome, but it makes no sense, and I learned the hard way.
Okay.
it literally makes no sense. Apparently I finished the storyline, apparently I had no idea what was going on, but it's fun because I'm really terrible at shooter games, like I'm so bad at it, but I'm not bad at this one and I love it.
Cool.
And so yay. I'm like leveling up, and like I Skype with my friends and we play it and it's great, and like it's not exactly, it's fan to me because it's video games ish but it's not like
that's,
you know,
a fandom.
Stereotypical fandom, but it's fun.
Yeah, I'll be talking about another video game fandom later in the show, so I think you're fine. But no, that's cool. That's good. I don't know if you have yet, but you still need to play The Last of Us, and then you need to get your affairs in order and start playing Fallout 4.
I know.
Because it's going to suck up your life, but I think you're really going to love both, especially actually Fallout 4, because it's like one of those open world adventure games. You design your own character. I have this awesome character that is just like, I don't know, I think she's the coolest, and like I know that I designed her and the game created her, but I feel like, you know, she's my character now, and I'm like, oh my god. And she's just like going through the wilderness and meeting all these awesome people and fighting off all these beasts and being a hero, and I think that's amazing. And I'm so glad, like selfishly glad, that my brother is now addicted to the game, because it is his PlayStation and he plays it all the time, and that kind of allows me to like get rid of my addiction to it forcibly,
because you can't use it.
No, I can't. And, like, I would if I could, you know, like now when I edit this podcast, that's the only time that I really allow myself to play it. So I'm probably gonna keep you here for 5 hours just so, you know, I have more time to No, I'm kidding, maybe. But yeah, no, video games can be a lot of fun, but oh my gosh, do they feel like it's like a life suck, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, tell me about it.
So that's a bit of a shame, but also amazing. So yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing in fandom this past weekend. We would love to hear what you guys are obsessed with at the moment so we can find new and exciting ways of wasting our time. So do let us know via the usual outlets. Moving into news now, we have a lot of topics to cover, but we're actually going to start with a sad story, which was definitely the biggest story of the week. So we want to address it here at the very top of the show.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it's a sad, sad time for music. Another icon gone too soon. Prince, the legendary artist formerly known as, and now actually known as again as Prince. He died at 57 over the past week, and it just really shook the music industry. Like Bowie, who we talked about a couple of episodes that passed ago, he just was such an influence on the world of music in general. collaborated with so many artists. You know, even if you're not a huge Prince fan, I can assure you, you've probably heard a couple of his songs, like Purple Rain, which is the one he won the Oscar for, and also I think the Grammy for, Little Red Corvette, Kiss. He just was so innovative in every sense of the world and just effortlessly was able to fuse all types of genres together, and was just, his voice was so recognizable. So it was just a really sad time for the music industry to lose somebody that was so iconic. In the course of his career, he actually sold over 100 million records and made 39 studio albums. He won 7 Grammy Awards, a Golden Globe, and an Oscar. And yeah, it's just, I don't know if you guys were fans, but I know that, like, my family, you know, they always instilled in us that we need to listen to the classics. So Prince was definitely one of those, you know, musicians like Michael Jackson and Bowie and the Beach Boys and stuff like that, that was like constantly playing in our house. So it's just really sad when you lose somebody that's made such an impact on the world. But the good news is that his music lives on, just like many of the legends that we lose. And I'm sure he's only going to continue to influence some acts that we listen to today, like Justin Timberlake and the like, that are still heavily influenced by his music and his sound. So
I feel like so many, and probably this happens every year, but just because we're so involved with fandom now and social media is so big, we feel it more. But I feel like over the past couple of years, like, we've lost so many icons,
mm-hmm.
you know, both in actors and musicians and cinematographers and composers, you know, like, it feels like huge names are just going at the moment. And that's a little bit scary.
Yeah, it really makes
I know it's so dumb because, I'm sorry, but like, people keep getting older and it's going to keep happening. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's life. But it feels like there's a huge death now every you know, couple right. of months at least.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like you always think people like this that are like so iconic that have like made such a dent in pop culture. Like, you feel like they're going to live forever because in a way they do. Like, their legacy lives on. But as we get older, like you alluded to, we get to the point where, like, even some of our heroes that are, you know, maybe more recent artists, like, they're going to get older too. And some of them are probably going to die before us. And it's just, I think it puts everything into perspective, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. just mortality mm-hmm. in general, especially like when it's somebody that's like close to our parents' generation too. Mm-hmm. I think that's when we start to feel it more.
So RIP Prince, it's been very sad and it's been really sort of bittersweet to follow the outpourings of social media tributes to this artist who was clearly so incredibly impactful. So RIP. So sort of shifting gears a little bit, because we have obviously a lot of other news to get into, and we're going to start in the movie realm with a package news story. Disney has announced a grand total of 9 new live-action movies and confirmed stars and directors for most of them. So this is a pretty huge chunk of new information. Yeah. Now, some of these we kind of already knew, but some of these is nice to get confirmed. And there's actually, it's surprising, a few that are not on this list, but we can just discuss that briefly when I've read out the list. So the first one, first of all, I had no idea. This is weird. It's Cruella, from obviously, 101 Dalmatians, but it's going to be a Cruella origin story, I suppose, with Emma Stone set for the title role and Kelly Marcel writing it. There's, A Wrinkle in Time with Ava DuVernay attached to direct and Jennifer Lee writing. We knew this one already. Then there's Jungle Cruise with Dwayne Johnson set to star and John Requa and Glenn Ficarra writing. Now, this one is not the sequel to Jungle Book, but that is in fact also happening, and it's called The Jungle Book 2 with a director and writer John Favreau and Justin Marks both returning. And then there is everyone's favorite tagline, Dumbo with Tim Burton and writer Aaron Kruger. There's a sequel to Mary Poppins, we knew this one too, with the director Rob Marshall, starring Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda. Ah, the two people that could get us all excited for a sequel to Mary Poppins, for sure. Then there's Maleficent 2 with Angelina Jolie. and Lena Wolverton writing it. And there's the Tinkerbell Project with Reese Witherspoon, with Victoria Strauss writing. And finally, The Nutcracker and the Four Realms with director Lasse Hallström and writer Ashley Powell. So that last one, I have no idea what that is, and I also am not sure about the Jungle Cruise. But the rest of them, this could be a whole show if we just went through them. So let's sort of try to distill it a little bit. But the one that I wanted to remark on is the Cruella with Emma Stone, because like, how are you going to... It's just like a logistical question. How are you going to make even remotely family-oriented movie about a woman who skins puppies to make pelts?
Oh, man. I mean, how did they make one about a dragon? That's a good premise. They made one with Maleficent, and she killed people all the time, so...
Yeah, I know, but killing people and skinning puppies? Like, I feel like there's things you don't do on film and things you do.
Well, I mean, you just never explicitly show it. You just tell her, I want that dog. Like,
I guess I don't know. And I mean, it's a dumb question, but given, I feel like it's so macabre, you know?
Given the title and its similarity to Maleficent, it's and Emma Stone's age, obviously, it's definitely going to be an origin story. So I feel like it's gonna end up with her like figuring out why she wants fur and all
to
this stuff.
Kill lots of puppies. Yeah. I don't know. So. It just killing puppies is such a faux pas on film. I always felt like it was weird, and like they swept that under the rug, so to speak, in the cartoon. And also like aging down Cruella is like a little bit like, okay.
I'm excited for it. I think she's going to be an amazing Cruella.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a great actress.
Yes.
So that is interesting. Is there any one of these that you guys find particularly worth talking a little bit about?
Okay, you want me to pick one?
This is yes. So difficult.
Okay. Well, okay. It's how do you pick one of all of these? They're all so controversial.
I'm picking one. Okay. Let's talk about Mary Poppins.
Let's
okay,
do it.
Okay, good. Yay! And then, okay, perfect.
I was so excited and so scared, but now I think I'm just like a little less scared, because I feel like if Lin-Manuel Miranda is going to be in this, it'll be fine, hopefully.
Right?
Not a remake, so that makes me happy, because I feel like Mary Poppins, I'm sure we talked about this before on the show, it's so hard to touch that because it's so beautiful, but also like, I don't know, for me personally, I think it's one of those touchstones of my childhood. Which is why I will always like probably shed a little tear when I see Dick Van Dyke in his old age, because he's a national treasure and I'm just going to die when he dies. Like, I think that's going to hurt a lot. But yeah, I just really like that it's not necessarily a remake, but it's just more of a continuation to the story. And I think I can live with that. So.
Yeah. And this cast, I mean, again, Emily Blunt is like the one person that could pull off Mary Poppins, I feel like. Seriously. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is just so iconic and so amazing. And just getting those two people on board, like, soothed everyone's worries. I think that's so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess I'll talk about Jungle Cruise because...
Okay, interesting choice.
Well, because I'm a Disneyland cast member, okay?
So tell me what this is. What does this have to do with Disneyland?
Okay, it literally is. Yeah. Okay, Selena.
Kyle.
Every Disney fan is just like, oh my gosh. All right, so.
Well, I've never been. I'm poor.
It's not your fault. Jungle Cruise is a classic Disney attraction. It opened when the park opened, and it, I think, don't kill me, Disney fans who know I'm wrong. If it didn't open when the park opened, it was there. It's been there for at least 30 years. And it's like this boat ride that you take, and it takes you like through an animatronic forest. So you have animatronic like elephants and giraffe and a bunch of things and stuff. And the tour guide is like talking to you the entire time as you're walking through or like driving through this river. And it's the cornerstone piece of this attraction is that it's filled with cheesy puns, like the cheesiest of the cheesiest puns ever. Like, they have granite jokes, and they're like, oh, that is a piece of limestone, but a lot of people take that for granite. And I can't even, like, Pam knows what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, they also show you the other side of water.
And so the reason I picked this is because it's going to be very interesting to see them make a movie, because it's very clearly going to be a comedy, because you can't have a serious movie about the Jungle Cruise because it's so corny. It's so corny. Like, it's,
I'm just,
it just
wondering,
is.
Like, obviously it's going to be some kind of action movie, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to, like, and clearly, like, I'm assuming that Dwayne Johnson is going to be, like, the Jungle Cruise captain.
Yeah,
so
that's
I'm
what
thinking
I'm assuming,
it's
too,
going
yeah.
to be, like, Speed meets Disney. You guys remember that movie Speed with Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves, where there's, like, a runaway bus?
Yes.
I feel like it's going to be that. Disney-fied with the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah. It's going to be very weird, because everyone is wondering, like, how are you going to make a movie out of the Jungle Cruise? But people fail to realize that they made the Pirates of the Caribbean movies off the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
That's true. Like,
it was based off the ride. So, and there is a plot, you know, about a ship or a boat that goes on this tour and ends up, like, being one of the tours that comes back, because after the other tour gets sunk or, like, traded off for heads and
eaten
bones
by
and stuff.
The cannibals.
Yeah. Yeah, so
sounds like Jumanji.
It, pretty much, yes.
Which is ironic that you say that.
Okay. Why?
Because The Rock is also starring in the Jumanji remake.
Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a double feature. So, I mean, there's lots we could talk about more with this, including, of course, the Tim Burton's Dumbo that we're all kind of, I think, pretending doesn't exist. So, and also worth noting is that obviously we're still, because the Ariel with Chloe Moretz has pretty much been confirmed as well, the Little Mermaid. So I don't really know why this isn't on
the
slate, maybe just because it's not news.
The Little Mermaid is not Disney.
Is it not the remake?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a remake of the Disney.
No, it's more Hans Christian Andersen. I believe it's DreamWorks. Don't quote me on that. But I believe it's definitely not a Disney production. But you know what is conveniently left off of this is Winnie the Pooh, which everybody is assuming is not happening.
That's true.
Thank God.
That's the one that gives me nightmares, point. You guys.
Yeah. Mm. Can we not do that?
I know. And obviously Mulan is the big one that is not here, because that has been announced too. And we're still waiting on stars and directors and stuff for that, and people are speculating whether, like, they're dropping it or whether they're just not ready to announce it yet. But obviously after seeing Jungle Book, I think Mulan would be the one I would be most excited about, just because of the fantastic worlds they can create and that kind of thing.
As long as they cast an Asian person as Mulan.
Well, yeah. Speaking of.
Did you like that transition?
Yeah, I did. It was great.
So the reason I say that is because there's a ton of controversy about Doctor Strange, because there are all these characters that are very heavily known as like of Asian descent, and they're being played by white actors. Like Tilda Swinton is playing this character that is mostly seen as someone who typically comes from Asia, and so it's very interesting, because instead of kind of like ignoring all of the people that are like, what's going on, Marvel decided to come out with a statement that I don't think helped them in any way,
yeah,
shape,
no.
or form. The statement is very short, so I'll read it very briefly. And it says, Marvel has a very strong record of diversity in its casting of films and regularly departs from stereotypes and source material to bring its MCU to life. The Ancient One is a title that is not exclusively held by any one character, but rather a moniker passed down through time. And in this particular film, the embodiment is Celtic. We are very proud to have the enormously talented Tilda Swinton portray this unique and complex character alongside our richly diverse cast. No.
And you then guys they made some very unfortunate remarks on Tibet that this isn't the outlet for, but that really pissed me off.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jesus. Like, they just dug themselves into a hole with this one. Because a strong record of diversity in its casting of films. Where? No. What films are they talking about?
Well, Kyle, look. Captain America has birthed both a female sidekick and a black sidekick. What more do you want?
Okay, sure.
No, I'm totally kidding. Like, I know they have more than that, and they're not sidekicks. But no, I mean, this, like, it's so funny because we joke about Marvel's lack of diversity all the time. Like, its complete lack of LGBTQ representation and its relegation of people not white men named Chris to the sidelines of their stories, and we're saying, you know, Marvel can be amazing and super fun and super entertaining and stuff, but diverse isn't a word you'd ever really use to describe the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So them coming out and being like, yeah, we're super diverse, like, that's really worrying, because one thing would be if they said, look, diversity is not our priority, we just want to make films with people named Chris, we'd be like, okay, that's weird, but whatever. But this is just like, no, guys.
They're talking about the people that made a movie with a villain called the Mandarin and then cast a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
which
what?
Was to avoid a stereotype in sort of quote unquote fairness, even though it was sort of a misguided. which I guess this is as well. But you know, Danya from Hyperbole made a really good point, and she said if they wanted her to be Celtic, why did they not set her in a Celtic country? Like, Ireland. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not... Like, that's... Like, making her a Celtic origin and still having her in Asia doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No. Not at all. That would make a lot... Like, I feel like people would be a lot more... Less pissed if they're like, alright, he's gonna go to, like, Ireland to, like, see this person.
Well, then maybe they would be pissed because they would be like, why are you not just going to Asia?
Yeah.
So they, no matter what they do, people will get pissed. Like, I agree with that part of it. Is they said, you know, no matter what, we were going to get backlash. That is true.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's not, you know, Danya has this fantastic and really well-sourced article up on Hyperbole about Tilda Swinton's casting and why... You know, why it's a problem to her and to a lot of other people. So I would definitely recommend that for reading. But I just, you know, if Marvel really thinks it's diverse, then I don't know what to say. So there's that.
There's that. Yep.
Moving on to another book to film adaptation, I guess. There's really no way to transition this one. I was grasping at straws, you guys. I'm not sure if people are excited about this. I know that there is a fan base
I'm so excited about this.
Well, that's good. So pretty much, we already knew that Neil Patrick Harris had signed on to star in Netflix series of Unfortunate Events remake as Count Olaf, the evil, sinister Count Olaf. And we finally got some pictures of him in his full Count Olaf garb, looking very similar to the character that Lemony Snicket dreamed up, and also very similar to the likeness that Jim Carrey had when he played him in the big screen version of the series of Unfortunate Events. So if you want to take a look at Neil Patrick Harris and all of his Count Olaf glory, you can do that on Hyperbole.com, where we have gathered some of the pictures that people have taken while they've been filming out in Canada. And everybody else is kind of very much unknown actors, because a lot of this is pretty much dependent on these kids that are going to be playing Violet and Klaus, and so that's pretty much all there is to this. But I'm glad that you're excited, Kyle, because I do want to know what you think about how he looks, because I think some people were not happy with this casting. I think it's great.
I think it's fantastic. I think he looks great, and I feel like Neil Patrick Harris has proved that he can act the heck out of anything. So it's going to be really interesting to see him play a character that's so different than most of the things we've ever seen him in. And it's, I don't know, I think he looks amazing. And it's very interesting to me in that he looks very, like, homeless. Like, right. You know? It's so weird that, like, that's the look that they're going with it. Like, I don't know. But, like...
I guess, have you read the books?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess, like, I it's been a while, but isn't, like, Count Olaf kind of, like, just looking to get his cut of the inheritance money?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's why he looks all homeless, because he's, like really down on his luck.
I always imagined him as someone, like... I had a different picture of him in my head, I think, than most people.
Yeah. I think what I really hope, though, is that, like, obviously, at the beginning... Count Olaf is kind of like this evil villain in a bit of a hokey way. And I think we saw Jim Carrey do that very well in the movie. But I hope that he puts his own spin on it, because it would be a shame for him to just like do the same thing that Jim Carrey did.
I really hope. I can't. And the fact that it's on a Netflix series is amazing. I cannot wait.
Awesome. So our next story is just a little... sort of fun little story that I wanted to bring up and also to clarify, because this terrified me when I first read the headline. So Star Wars Episode 8 invited Princes William and Harry onto the set where they got to hug Chewbacca and other sort of geek-worthy stuff. And the headline reads, Star Wars Episode 8 cameos set for Prince William and Harry. And not only does Andrew spell 8 with an 8 and not a V and 3 I's, like Roman style. So there's that. But there's also, you know, Prince William and Harry cameoing in it in Star Wars. When I read that headline, I had these flashes of like, oh God, Lucas on Earth, they're going to go to England and meet the princess like, in the movie. And I was like, no, this movie's going to suck. But turns out it's the cameos that we were also treated to in Episode 7, which is the Stormtrooper cameos. They were sort of surprised on set with the Stormtrooper uniforms and told to suit up. And they're going to be appearing in a scene where Rey and Finn infiltrate a secret base. And the Rebel characters are in a lift with Benicio del Toro's character when a group of Stormtroopers enter, two of whom are William and Harry. This is very cool, also because we know Finn and Rey are going to be working together, so that's a cool little snippet of information. And it's going to be fun to watch it knowing that the princes are in their suits, and it's also going to be great not to be distracted by the fact that the princes are in
suits. I'm really happy that they would be suited up as stormtroopers, because otherwise it'd be like, it would break the wall, I feel like, the fourth
completely.
Wall.
Completely.
Yeah, too much. But this story actually made me really happy. I thought the pictures were so cute. They were great.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm just gonna to answer Kyle. Like, it's kind of like David Beckham has a cameo in the new King Arthur movie, and like that's the dumbest thing ever. So I was like, oh no. But yeah, yes, this I agree, Pam. This the story is very cute, and I'm relieved that their cameos will be like Daniel Craig style, who was of course appeared in The Force Awakens in secret. So yeah, cool little story there. So back to the rock. We're in between two rocks.
Oh yeah, sorry. So we, as we already talked about, the rock, Dwayne Johnson is getting so many roles nowadays. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. But he officially announced that he's going to be partaking and starring in a remake of Jumanji. He announced it on his Instagram, and he said it's official, and he's they're going to produce a whole new generation of a title that he loves and is one of his all-time favorites, Jumanji. So the script is being written up with the 7 Bucks Sprod team. Do you guys know who that is?
No.
It's going to be really interesting to see Dwayne The Rock Johnson in a Jumanji remake, because no one wants a Jumanji remake at all. And I can't picture The Rock starring in it. No. Like,
why? I think he would be good in this.
No. What is
but
he
why?
Gonna, is he gonna play what, the character that Robin Williams played? No, the character that Robin Williams was in Jumanji was this guy who, like, this kid that was scared of everything, got sucked in the jungle and learned to cope with it, and is still very much like lost and confused when he gets out. And The Rock is too bro-y and adult and grown up and like manly to play that sort of character.
Okay. Plot twist. What if he plays Bonnie Hunt's character and the person that gets sucked into the jungle is actually a girl?
Ooh. I want that.
So instead of Alan Parrish, it's like Amanda Parrish. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
something yes. like that. That would be amazing. I would be so down for that. And like The Rock being confused and being like, what the heck is going on? You were in the jungle for all this time. Yeah.
What like, what if it's like his sister or something and he like never thinks he's going to see his sister again. And his sister is like comes out and she, I don't know. I'm just freeballing here.
No, I mean, I would like that a lot more. But then also he announced that Kevin Hart is also going to star in it. And that just makes me go double no to this.
Maybe.
Because I don't know. I can't take them seriously. And look, while I totally get that Jumanji isn't like this super serious, like insane action-packed film, but like it's not a Kevin Hart comedy film. Like, you know, it's I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Are any of you excited about this at all?
No. I mean, no. I don't know. I don't have a lot of attachment to the first one. So, I mean, this could be like a totally different type of remake, couldn't it? Because it is based on the board game. So they could do all kinds of crazy stuff with it.
Can we just stop casting The Rock and everything? That'd be great.
Aww.
I mean, I like him, but it's just he's in Baywatch. He's in the new Disney animated princess movie. He's in Shazam. He's going to be in this. He's going to be in a Jungle Cruise movie. Like, Jesus. It's insane.
That's true.
Yeah. Just saying. Although, I am really excited about the next movie, so let's just get away from Jungle Book crap.
All right, well, you guys ready for some Harry Potter / J.K. Rowling news?
Yes, please.
Always.
All right. I guess we'll start with the one that had the fandom going WTF. So we all know that we're getting Fantastic Beasts in November. Everybody's really excited about Fantastic Beasts. What J.K. Rowling just announced is that she's decided that we can all have the script in book form if we choose to purchase it, or in ebook form if we go over to Pottermore.com. That's right, you guys. After you watch Fantastic Beasts, you can go word by word in the script and reenact all of your favorite scenes starting the day after the movie hits theaters. Let's discuss. Good idea, bad idea, in between.
Bad. Cop-out idea. It's a cop-out idea. Because everyone was wanting, like, it was one of the articles that we had in our, like, 10 headlines that we want to see in 2016 was a Fantastic Beasts novelization. Everyone wanted the novel part. We wanted to see a story, because the current book is just, like, a bestiary. And so, instead of giving everyone what they want, she's giving everyone what they kind of want in the form of a script, which is completely different than a novelization. So I feel like
it should be noted too that this is also like it's an in addition to the updated re-release version of Fantastic Beasts that she will be releasing sometime in 2017 with all new writing. Like, on top of what we've already seen in the original book that she wrote for charity. So it'll be interesting to see what she adds to that. But, yeah, a script book, like, I guess, like, I could see why people would want it. But I almost kind of feel like they should have just done this as an additive to, like, a DVD bonus package. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it would have worked nicer that way.
I think this doing this is, it's something that I definitely saw coming, especially after they announced the Cursed Child script book. I think it's a logical sort of unavoidable move, and like while I agree with Kyle that obviously a novel would have been fantastic, J.K. Rowling is working on like a million things right now, so I doubt that's sort of something that was you know, pen and paper was not her priority for this particular project. But I think because people are very, very excited about this. Actually, very, very excited about this for the obvious reason. It's gonna be a J.K. Rowling work that they can put on their bookshelf. Like, that's basically the reason people are going to buy this, just because Harry Potter fans are completionists, you know? And I think that's enough reason. It's going to put Newt's face on bookshelves, and it's going to, like, give Barnes & Noble and whatever booksellers, like, a tie-in to the movie. It's, people are going to buy this, and it's definitely, like, it is a money grab, but it's also, like, people aren't forced to buy it. So if there's demand, then I think they would be stupid not to do it. And as I said in the article as well, I think the one thing that will give us something else is that this is the script that J.K. Rowling wrote. Like, this isn't some adaptation or interpretation of her words. This is actually her words. So when we get the script, we also get descriptions of characters and places. We maybe get, like, extra lines of dialogue or scenes that were cut from the final movie. We get all this in-depth directions for how she imagined that the story would look. And for a Harry Potter fan and a J.K. Rowling fan, I think there's some value to that. Even though, of course, it is, when you cut it to the bone, and it is, quote-unquote, just the script of a movie. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there is some value for hardcore Potter fans.
And I think that if they do that, and it's not just, like, a word-for-word regurgitation of, like, what we see in the movie, I think that that would hold more interest to fans. And I really hope that they do that. I think that there is, like, a lot of potential for them to make this something really cool. I'm just hoping that they see that vision, I guess, is my thought on that.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. But we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, November's just around the corner, so we will report back when we finally have this in our hands. Isn't that scary, though, for real? Like, it's kind of just around the corner.
Just around the corner. It's April.
Would you prefer just around the river bend? This is not...
Yes,
I would.
Always.
I would. Always, yeah.
All right. Well, getting back to the magical world of J.K. Rowling's Wizarding everything. We also got our first behind-the-scenes look at the upcoming Harry Potter and the Cursed Child play. It was a small little video feature that the official play Twitter account posted earlier this week, and in it we see J.K. Rowling visiting the Palace Theatre in London, where of course all the magic is taking place, and we don't see very much about what's going on story-wise because they're trying to keep all of that secret as long as they can, but we do see our brand new Harry, Ron, and Hermione practicing their wand skills, which is really exciting. We also see some kind of blocking with what looks like Hogwarts chess, so that's leading me to think that maybe we'll see the next generation of Potters and Weasleys going off to Hogwarts, which would be interesting to experience live or read about if you're like me, who's like not going, and it's really sad. But that's neither here nor there. And then we also get a small little talk with Rowling and John Tiffany and Jack Thorne, who are the creator and playwright, respectively, for this play. And she just kind of talks about how she's really excited about it, but she also kind of hopes that, you know, the magic is kind of kept secret as long as possible so people can really enjoy this in the way that they're supposed to. Kind of like how we enjoyed our Harry Potter books, hopefully unspoiled and kind of going along the adventure as we turn the page and stuff like that. So I just thought that this was a really fun little featurette to release because it didn't give a lot away, but you kind of got the excitement factor of thinking, wow, this is like the eighth Potter story coming to life, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. So.
Yeah, the trio was so cute with their wands and stuff. Like, oh, that just warmed my heart. Pam, I have a question for you. If you, because I know you are in San Francisco, of course, and we've heard that Hamilton will be touring over there. Yes, so if you had the choice of swapping with me, going to Cursed Child, and I would go to Hamilton, what would you choose?
That's like my own personal Sophie's choice in theatrical form. I know. Why would you do this to me?
Which would you, if you had the option between those two shows, which one would you pick?
I think I would... God, I don't know. That's no matter what really you say, hard.
It's going to be wrong.
I know. I'm damned if I do, and I'm damned if I don't. Do I get, like, the original Hamilton cast, or do I get the touring cast of Hamilton?
You get the original cast.
Oh, I get the original cast? That's even worse. And think I'd have to flip a coin and then I'm I would a
cruel
forever.
God.
I think I'd have to flip what? A coin. I think I'd have to flip a coin and then I would still be upset with my choice, but still happy at the same time. It's like Ron when he's reading the tea leaves. You're going to suffer, but you're going to be happy about it. That would be me.
Yeah. Can't believe you're not choosing. That's such a cop out.
I know. I think I would choose. You're going to choose Hamilton?
Mm-hmm.
I think I might choose Kirstyle because I feel like Hamilton will be around for longer. But Kirstyle might end.
I feel like Kirstyle is going to come to America, though. Like, I feel like that's going to happen, but with a different cast. But because you're probably not going to get as attached to the cast as Hamilton, I would want to see Hamilton with the original cast because that's so much more iconic. And it was made famous in... in this form, like the music is such a big part of Hamilton, there's not going to be songs in Cursed Child, and I feel like Cursed Child, it's more about the story of what happens to Harry and the others than it is about seeing them acted out live on stage.
That's true, but so I feel
Hamilton
like
would be my choice.
That is a good, that is a fair argument, but I feel like if you're going to go see like a Harry Potter play, if you're going to go like opening night, whatever, I feel like the electricity right. in that theater is going to be amazing. Like it's going to be thrumming.
Opening night.
And
absolutely.
And I think that would be amazing to experience in and of itself. Thinking about like the sheer palpable emotion that's going to be buzzing through the crowd. Is like
we're gonna be there opening
exciting.
Night.
Exactly.
Is it opening night we're gonna go?
We are attending the
like
very
the first
preview.
Oh my god. I didn't even know
I hadn't realized that until because I was looking at their website. I was looking at the Fantastic or the Child's Cursed Child website, and they had a timer and it said 40 days. And I was like, well, that's weird. My timer for my Europe trip says 35 days until I'm in London. And I'm like, hold on. And I like went to their schedule and important dates, June 7th, first preview. That is our night.
And that's the only reason why I might be tempted to pick Cursed Child over Hamilton, because I feel like there's only going to be one first Cursed Child show. Like Hamilton will always be great, but
and it's going to be so interesting because
that we miss from like when Potter was thriving with like the original series, like that's going to be there that night.
Yeah, and it's good because everyone who goes to a preview is going to be seeing something different than what is going to be premiering on July 30th because the show opens like it hard opens on July 30th. And so they're going to be changing things, and we're going to be seeing a it's going to be so weird to see how it changes. And I wish I can, like, go again, you know?
Yeah.
Just see the differences.
Yeah. I agree. I wanted to, but yeah. Anyway, we can talk about this for a while, but.
Tweet at us and tell us what you would pick and why.
Yes, definitely. We should do a poll.
Exactly.
That would be interesting.
Given the chance.
Going to TV news. Away from Harry Potter and away from like movies and stuff, we have a pretty big news story. Over the past weekend, Doctor Who announced who the next companion is going to be. The actress's name is Pearl Mackey, and she's going to play a girl named Bill. And so they released the very, very, very first footage of her with the Doctor fighting Daleks and stuff, and We don't really know anything about her. We don't know really anything much about the actress because she's currently starring in a production of The Curious Incident of the Dog on the West End.
Nothing. Go on.
Of the dog in the nighttime is the full response, but in the article we have Curious Incident of the Dog. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how fans react to her. So far, everyone loves her, or most people love her. And of course, there are critics because, yet again, it is another just a young female companion for the Doctor, which is kind of what bugs me a little bit. Is I was really looking forward to someone, I don't know, older or a male companion or something, just to shake things up. I'm really happy that they cast a person of color in this, though, as the companion, mm-hmm. because we haven't had one since Martha. And the show is diverse. It has a really diverse cast when it comes to, like, extras and characters that they bring into the show and stuff. But the main set, like, companions and doctors, haven't really ever been that diverse. So it's nice to see another person of color join the companion crew. I'm just really excited. Bill seems really interesting and very informal and confused. And it's been a long time since we've seen a companion get reintroduced to the entire concept of time travel and the Doctor and Daleks. So it's always fun. You guys watch, right?
Ish. I go in and out. I wasn't a big
fan. You didn't like Clara, right?
No, I didn't. I didn't like Clara. I'm very, very excited to get a new companion because I've liked everyone except Clara. And I liked Martha. I did think she was a little bit boring. You know, like there wasn't mm-hmm. anything to her. She was just perfect. And I always found those characters less interesting. Donna was probably my favorite. She was the most interesting of them all. I think this girl, like for all... She looks great. It's hard to judge, but I assume that she's going to be really good. And as long as they give her an interesting story, because that's really what clinches it for me. Like Amy, I thought had a very interesting story, and mm-hmm. Donna had a fantastic just presence. And Rose was the first, and she felt the most important. You know, so I feel mm-hmm. like this girl and Clara was just kind of blah. You know, and they gave her all these convoluted backstories that ended up being meaningless. And she was just, like, she was such a, like, again, she was kind of, she had the same as Martha. She was kind of too perfect. Like, too sweet and too good and too, like, good at solving everything and stuff. So I'm as long as Bill has something different. This might seem, like, totally greedy, but wouldn't it be amazing if we got, like, a POC doctor one day?
Yes.
You know, like, is that too much to ask?
No.
I mean, anything's possible, but...
Yeah.
He's gotten old mm-hmm. maybe the logical next step is to shake it up.
It's really interesting, because I think the last time I, like, thought about Doctor Who and, like, talked about it, like, I didn't really... Like, the Doctor just didn't coincide with the face of Peter Capaldi for me, but, like, talking about it now, I don't know, something clicks, and...
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, well, I'm really happy. I'm super excited.
This might actually entice me to get back on the Doctor Who bandwagon, because I think I fell off like right after Claire was introduced. Because even when we saw her when Amy was still around, like she just didn't do it for me. Kind of like what Selena was alluding to. So I don't know.
Maybe yeah, I'll, I think a lot of fans are going to be coming back to the show after.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's not even like Capaldi. I've heard great things about Capaldi, so it wasn't like necessarily that Matt Smith left. It was just that I was no longer invested. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the chemistry between the Doctor and the Companion. And if it's not there, it's like, well, what am I really watching? So you might have just enticed me, Kyle.
And yeah, I mean, yay, I'm glad. And we won't know when we're going to see her. We only know that there's going to be a Christmas special this year on December 25th. So she might be introduced in the Christmas special, or she might wait until 2017 when the show returns. Yeah. So,
well, I'm so excited too, because like you were saying, like Peter Capaldi is a fantastic doctor. And I really felt like Clara brought him down. You know, like, I hate to say this, but I felt like his introduction came. He was such a weird, over-the-top person when he was first introduced, and Clara is so grounded and so, like, good at everything that she became our point-of-view character. Like, I know that the companion is that a lot of the time, but I feel like the Doctor was never really allowed to find his calm. Because Clara always had to be the reasonable one, and he became sort of the over the top, like I don't know, she kept having to talk him off the ledge, so to speak, you know, and that dynamic I wasn't a fan. So I feel like with a new companion that's introduced to this world, he's gonna be the one that has an upper hand now, and he's gonna be the one who has to teach her about the world. Unlike with Clara, where it was really her being like the wise one of the two of them. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing him in that role, because, again, I think he's great. and I would love to see him with someone else.
Yeah, I agree. So this is great. I really cannot wait to see how he interacts with another companion.
Yeah. And this is great, this is a luxury problem, but I like that Laura noted in her post that at the time of writing, Mac had 654 followers, and I just went on her Twitter page, now she has 20,000. So that's what happens when you get cast in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and when I looked at her account, she wasn't verified, and now she is.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So that's fun. Can you imagine, like, I know we need to move on, but, like, it's so insane just the concept of being an actor that's just, like, in a, like, West End play that has, like, you know, like, 650 followers. Like, no big deal. Just, like, living life real humble. And then, like, all of a sudden this is announced and, like, bam, like, you're verified. You have thousands of followers. Everyone in the world is paying attention to you. Like, oh, she literally just got, like, hit with, like, okay, not literally. Let me rephrase that. It's like she got hit with a bus of fame. Like, bam.
Yeah. Yes.
It's insane. Sorry, I just had to point that out. That's insane to me. Like, mind blown.
Yeah. Just looking at pictures of her in her costume and stuff, she just looks so cool, and the two of them look so cool together. Like, I like it so much. I think this looks great. So, rounding off this news with this new segment with another exciting piece of news, at least for me, and maybe for Kyle too, is that the Nintendo NX, which is Nintendo's new system, game system, it's a code name, so we don't really know what it's called yet. Although I think the NX is a great name, so I don't know why they don't just use that. Anyway, that is coming finally in 2017 as a new system. Their current one is the Wii U, which I don't even, like, my brother doesn't even own that. So you know, like, how bad that is, apparently, because he owns everything. and with the NX is launching the new Zelda game that we have been waiting for since 2014. So it's been a long way off. And originally, like, when the new Zelda game was first announced with that iconic fan art of, or art of Link in his blue outfit that was made everyone like, oh my god, it's supposed to be green. We don't like change. So that came out in 2014, and we were all sort of, oh, maybe it'll come out in 2015, and it didn't. And then Nintendo said 16, and now they're saying 17, but it's March of 2017, and it'll come out with both the NX and the Wii U.
Which means the Wii, I'm so outdated. Mm-hmm. I have a Wii, and you know.
Yeah, my brother does too. So we'll have to upgrade one way or another. So, like, this is obviously the closest that Zelda has yet come to an open world game. We don't know, like, open world might be the wrong word to use about it, but it's definitely going to be expansive. The world of Hyrule is huge, and you get to do the quests more out of order. So you aren't set by the storyline like you have been in previous games. And having just played, you know, Fallout, like we talked about earlier, I am definitely, definitely excited for this new format. And I am already planning to say goodbye to the world, because I'm going to be leaving it behind for The Legend of Zelda for a couple of months, because I'm so excited for this. I love Zelda. It's my favorite thing in the whole world.
Yeah, I'm glad they're saving it, actually.
I was just going to say, I love that they're saving it for the new console, because I have a feeling that this new game is going to be like a completely new thing like we've never seen for Zelda before. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're holding it for the NX also tells me it's going to be a bit of a different gaming experience.
I'm super excited for what concept the NX is going to bring, because the Wii U changed the gaming industry, didn't it? Like, because, like, it was like one of the first consoles ever to have, like, to, like, you move your hand and it affects the game, and, like, and so it's like, what are they gonna do now? Like, how are they gonna top
virtual that? Are they gonna do virtual reality at all? Like, is it gonna be 3D? Like, there's gonna be something.
Yeah, it's gonna be, it's, ooh, people are gonna have their minds blown, I'm sure, when the NX comes out.
Yeah. What a time to be alive. Right. So we're very much looking forward to this, and we'll keep you guys updated as we learn more. There was also a gorgeous piece of new art featuring Link in his new blue. I'm warming to the blue. I hope, because there's been some stuff of him in green as well, but I hope we get the option of having him in blue because I like it.
Same.
Yeah. So that's the end of the news. Thank you so much for keeping up. We had a couple of other stories for Kristen, but she's not here, so we're just going to name them here at the end, which is that Marvel has pulled their Inhumans movie off their Phase 3 slate. We don't yet know if that means it's not happening or if they're just gonna hold it for Phase 4. Obviously, Inhumans is a big part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., something that I now know. So that's upsetting. And the X-Men Apocalypse final trailer revealed that Wolverine is gonna have a cameo in this movie. So you can check out all of that on Hypebol, as well as many more news stories and features. So, moving into TV show of the week.
Oh my gosh.
Guys, I haven't seen it, so I'll let you guys talk about it.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't, because I was going to, but then I just watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. instead. Well, so, okay. Go ahead.
I'll let Pam do it because she picked it first and then I piggybacked.
Oh my gosh. I really liked this first episode. I think that I'm most excited to see what happens with Sansa, personally.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one I'm watching for sure. I don't want to like spoil it in case people haven't seen it. But yeah, I think it's off to a nice start. I'm not really... I know a lot of people are like disappointed. A lot of people are supposedly quitting Game of Thrones, but I'm still very much... Yeah, because a lot of people weren't happy about last season and stuff, like viewers.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought that you were saying a lot of people were unhappy with the premiere. I was like, what?
No, why? I think a lot of people. Like, I'm not sure if like anybody actually like went through with the threats, but I felt like a lot of the fan base was upset with the way they were handling some things, and they were like,
I remember all the stuff
But I'm still invested and still curious to see what they do this time around. I'm also very interested to see what happens to Daenerys now that she's supposedly going to be exiled to the land of the widows.
I know.
That'll be interesting. But what did you think, Kyle?
Oh my gosh. I thought it was fantastic. And like, it was, it's rare when you get an episode of Game of Thrones that gets so many characters in the 1 hour that it has, and being able to see basically almost everyone except the kid Stark. What's his name? I'm terrible. Bran. Okay, I thought it was Bran. Yeah, we basically saw everyone except Bran, and it was really, I loved it, being able to, because they showed all the people I was interested in, all the people I cared about. And so that's why I really loved the episode. And it was really funny to me because I can say this without spoiler. It's not a spoiler. They haven't determined or they haven't proven whether or not Jon Snow is alive or dead yet. Like, that's still a mystery. It's interesting because it takes place immediately after the events of the finale last year. And so they have to like move Jon's body because like reasons. And people are analyzing the blood spatter left on the ground. That's how intense things are. Because
this,
they're like,
this is why I love fandom.
And it's like, and it's so amazing because I read like this article and people are saying that it like looks like a dragon, and then people are saying that it looks like a wolf, or like it looks like a wolf and then it changes into a dragon at some point because the shot changes, and like it's like, oh my god, people are insane. And it's so great. And the reveals, like, at the end of the episode, like, has so many implications and questions, and it's gonna be fantastic. And it was a great start to the season. And the fact that everyone is on the same page right now is amazing. Book readers, non-book readers, we're all like, what the heck? It's great. I'm literally shivering because I'm like, got so excited. My bad.
So
I hope you're okay.
Pretty much, in case you didn't realize, two thumbs up from me and Kyle.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to next week.
I'm like almost glad that I haven't seen it yet, because I felt like that was so close to being full of spoilers. But because I was here, you guys felt like you had to hold back, and I'm sure the listeners will appreciate that, because I'm sure not everyone has seen it yet. I'm not planning on boycotting it, but when it came back and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to find a way to watch it, and it's going to be really long, and it's probably going to like make me sad. And so I don't know. I'll watch it eventually. But there was one hypeable writer, Ariana, has chosen not to watch it. And she wrote a really nice article about why that's okay. It's okay to watch it, and it's okay not to watch it. You can do whatever you want. And so my show of the week is the same show as last week. And I'm very, very sad that Merrima's not here, because I was planning on, you know, basically talking with her about all the things she said last week about how she didn't really like, because last week when we were on the show, I had watched season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and now, no, season 1 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and now 1 week later I have watched season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I'm obsessed and I watch it every day. And I think like a lot of people were saying that season 2 was better than season 1, but I actually think I prefer season 1, just because I very much enjoyed having the gang together in their bus plane and fighting crime and getting to know each other, because I really like when characters get to know each other in shows. Mm-hmm. And then in season 2, they basically just spent the whole season fractured. And fighting each other, and I thought that was super sad. Also, there was so much going on, like, and maybe this is just because I watched it really fast, but I felt like I wasn't, until the very end, I wasn't totally sure why they were fighting. Like, it just felt like, but I know that the season 2 happened after after Captain America 2, so this was after the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D., so basically they set up the show to be about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then they disbanded S.H.I.E.L.D., and the show was like, okay, what the hell are we going to do now? So they were sort of like scrambling to find their footing, I felt like. So that's kind of okay, and I still very, very much enjoyed it. I really enjoyed a lot of the new characters, and I was sort of very upset because my favorite was Trip, and then he died, and then I had like a massive Twitter rant about it, and I got really sad about it, and I was like, characters always die, and I'm like exactly the opposite of Kyle, because Kyle's like, please kill off more characters, and I'm like, so sick of character death. So yeah, and the season just ended, and I had so much to say, like, oh my god, Skye's mom, and oh my god, her dad, and oh my god, I'm so glad Reyna's gone, because I hated her, and Ward is like the most psychopathic villain of all time, and I think he's a fantastic to watch, but I do not understand. I have to look into like the whole Stand With Ward thing now and figure out what the hell, like why people are actually on his side, because he's clearly a psychopath, so like I don't understand. And ooh, I'll like open a can of worms with that one, but I really want to know. And Fitzsimmons, oh my god, I'm going into season 3, and I'm totally going to watch it all and talk to you guys next week. I'm going to be all caught up, I'm sure. Yeah, that's it. That's my rant. None of you guys watch it, right?
I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Do you? I didn't know. Oh my god, are you all caught up?
Yep.
What did you think about, oh my gosh, there's so much that I want to ask you. I don't even know. Like, who's your favorite character?
Skye.
Is this guy? I love Skye.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah, I love Skye. She's awesome. And I just everything about her. I love her attitude. I like her demeanor and just like her importance is so awesome. And she's so unique. And I cannot wait for you to see more.
I know. And I love Coulson. And oh my god, I love Agent May. She's so fantastic.
I know, yes.
Though I did kind of notice, and this is just like a random thing, but you know how in Age of Ultron they were all super mad at the movie for what it did to Black Widow with the whole like, oh, she can't have kids thing. Like, I kind of felt like they did the same to May, you know, with her backstory and the child. And I was like, oh, are they really going to slant her story that way? It was like, okay, that was a little bit But no, it's so good. And like Fitzsimmons, and so funny because in season one, I started off like I loved Simmons and I wasn't a big fan of Fitz. I felt like he was just kind of like, I don't know. I didn't like him, and I didn't like that he was like trying to be a hero and Simmons was like making him sandwiches, and like that dynamic, I was a little bit like, I don't know. I just feel like Simmons should go off on her own and like date Mac or whatever.
Okay, maybe Fitz might be my favorite character.
Yeah, but no, because then now I love Fitz. I love him. Like, ever since season two and that amazing, like, thing that happened. It's not amazing that it happened to him, but I love that they made that happen to him. And then Simmons has just kind of gone dark side. And mm-hmm. now, like, literally dark side, because she sucked into that dark rock thing. And, yep. And she sort of became more unlikable as Fitz became more likable. And now he's one of my absolute favorite characters. And I just love how that shook up, you know, that changed. So I love it. I love everything about it. And I'm definitely going to keep watching and come back to you guys when I'm all caught up.
I can't wait.
So that's the end of the TV show of the week segment. Let us know via the usual outlets if you've watched Game of Thrones or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We had one comment from Stephanie Merrill who said, Selena, I'm so glad you're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The current season, especially the back half, has been so good. And I've heard a lot of people say that season 3 is really, really good, so I'm very much looking forward to that. So the rest of the listener feedback, we've got an email from Rebecca with a title that is most definitely going to get her emailed on the show, so she knows how to play the game. Kyle, I'll let you get that one.
Okay. Rebecca sent this email, and the email is titled, Hype 96. Selena is right about everything always.
Oh, Rebecca, you shouldn't have.
And she writes, while I'm super excited for Fantastic Beasts, I agree with Selena that an Albus Dumbledore prequel should have been the first spinoff. So much of the Dumbledore / Grindelwald storyline was cut, but it would make a great movie. Love, power, death, top it all off with a great LGBT character. They even have a name already set up, The Life and Lies of Albus Dumbledore. The lesson? Selena is always right. Keep hyping, Bex.
Yes, that is true. Yeah. And from what I know about Rebecca, she is also always right, because The Life and Lies of Albus Dumbledore would be amazing.
Yeah, sure.
You don't think so? Oh, we can talk about this some other time. I think it would be good. Okay. So we've got a bunch of tweets, and Pam, do you want to get the first one? And then Kyle, you guys can just go back and forth.
Sure. Yeah. Laura Morrow says, 100 episode, can you guys talk about how you got involved in hype and who came up with the show idea? Think of it as a # hypeable origins. That's kind of cute.
That's a good idea. We'd have to get Andrew back for that.
You need Andrew. Yeah, we need Andrew. Yeah.
That's a good idea. Abby, I like it.
Sorry. Abby Lee says, now that Octavia's had some closure, can her badass grounder hair make a comeback? #D100. I'm not caught up. I'm 3 episodes behind. Don't kill me.
Hair spoilers. Yes, I think yes. I vote yes.
Hayden Brown says, Justice Team Dean. That's a surprising turn of events.
Wait, what do you... What?
Is that
what
are Milo you talking Ventimiglia? About? The LinkedIn copy. Milo Ventimiglia. Oh. There was this interview where he was like, "Yeah, I don't think that Jess is the right guy for Dean
for Dean
for Rory." Oh. I didn't read the interview.
Well, now we know what Selena ships.
Yes, Jess. Jean. Okay. I ship Jean.
That's cute.
Jean. The Lady Ash says, today has not been great, but at least I have a new Game of Thrones and hypeable hype. #silverlinings. So many hashtags in the comments.
Virtual hugs
today.
To you.
I love
yes,
it.
Yes. Yes. Hope your day's better today.
We love you, Lady Ash.
Yes.
Jewel
says, yes, Greek hype special, please. And here's my Powerpuff self. Thank you for power puffing yourself for our amusement, Jewel. We appreciate that.
Yes, that was so cute.
It was really cute.
Heart eyes and everything.
They're all really cute. I love them.
Yes.
We're going to have a whole puff army by the time we're done.
Yes, that's perfect.
Puff Army.
I love it.
Yes.
You might even say Hufflepuff.
Oh.
Oh. Hufflepuff. Anyway, we'll figure that out. Please continue to Powerpuff yourselves, guys, because we love seeing what you come up with. Thanks for everyone who wrote in with your thoughts and theories and comments about Octavia's hair. If you want to write in about any of these topics or anything we talked about today, you can do that either by tweeting us at HypeableHype. You can email us hype@hypeable.com, and you can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. That wraps up this week's show. My name is Selena.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Pamela.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Bye.
My name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
I'm Kyle. Dang it!
Damn it!
No, because no, I had my
Me too. My mic was muted. I got you.
So I... Dang it.
We were the same.